This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Thursday, March 18th. I'm Matt Hoisch. In today's headlines, vaccinations roll on across San Miguel County, Telluride School District aims to bring more students back in person, Town Park Campground again under consideration for short-term housing solution, and a mountain weather forecast. But first, every day, KOTO brings you the community calendar, which details noteworthy events in the region. You can find it on our website as well at koto.org. It's considered the place to go for information about what's happening in the region, but we can't do that without you. Please, make a donation during our winter fund drive to help us keep up the community calendar and all our work by calling 970-728-4333 or going to koto.org. And thank you. Vaccinations continue to roll out across San Miguel County. According to Dr. Sharon Grundy, county medical officer and a physician at the Telluride Regional Medical Center, the county estimates between 1,500 and 1,700 residents are fully vaccinated. And this week, the county is rolling out its first 500 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
And that's awesome because that one only needs one dose, so we'll get to add to that fully vaccinated number, 500 people, after Saturday.
As more and more of the population has access to the vaccine, Grundy expects to see more vaccine hesitancy. She stresses getting the vaccine is a personal choice, but urges everyone to consider the risks of those around them in addition to personal risk.
So, hey, I'm not worried about myself, but who do I live with? Who do I work with? And are they at risk that I might get it and pass it to them?
She also asks people to consider the impacts on the wider community.
We are all getting vaccinated or encourage the majority of the population who are adults to get vaccinated because we really do want to reach herd immunity to protect so we can end this. There's a high possibility if we get to a certain percentage, we just will not see this virus any longer misbehaving.
There are several options to get a vaccine. Anyone who wants one can register on the San Miguel County Public Health website and get an email notification when they are eligible to go in. Anyone without email can call the Public Health Department. Grundy also points to vaccinefinder.org, a website run by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to help people find nearby vaccine distributors.
It basically links all the retail pharmacies, like Walmart, Walgreens, Safeway, Albertsons, and you can find out where you're going. You do it by zip code, and it shows you if there's a how to get in touch to see where there's clinics with the retail pharmacy programs.
If you can find an available vaccine, Grundy says, go and get it. Over the coming months, Grundy expects the region will continue to see small upticks in COVID cases, but they'll be easy to get under control. By fall, she even predicts the possibility of, quote, a somewhat normal film fest, unquote. But with spring break and off-season approaching, Grundy urges continued vigilance.
If people are traveling, just to also wherever you go, continue to have good practices so that we do not have an escalation in numbers as we all return.
Statewide, the number of Coloradans hospitalized by COVID-19 has been increasing in recent days. But the state's infectious disease experts say it will take some time to see if it's just a blip or part of a trend. Epidemiologist Rachel Herlihy says the state's overall case numbers have also stopped falling in recent days.
So this indicates to me that we're not yet at a place where we have population-level protection from the vaccine. It indicates to me that we really continue to need the strategies that we have been using, mask wearing, social distancing.
But disease experts did share some good news. They say they are not seeing as many people over the age of 70 being hospitalized with the virus, a trend they attribute to that group receiving the vaccine. If local COVID numbers continue to stay stable in the weeks after schools return from spring break, Grundy expects Public Health Director Grace Franklin will consider a move to less restrictive level blue on the COVID dial. More students may be able to return to classrooms in the coming weeks at the Telluride School District. Superintendent John Pandolfo discussed plans to expand in-person access at a Board of Education work session this week. After spring break, the district aims to reduce distancing in classrooms, allowing more students to come in person. That decision, Pandolfo notes, is based on a recent study in Massachusetts.
They did a long-term study of hundreds of thousands of students across a bunch of school systems, and they studied how much difference there is in transmission rates between building schools that had 3-foot distancing and schools that had 6-foot distancing. And the summary of that study was that there is no difference, that distancing at 3 feet did not show increased transmission.
The post-spring break changes would mean students can choose between 100% in person 4 days a week, with Wednesdays continuing to run fully remote, or 100% remote. Under current guidelines, Pandolfo adds, reduced distancing would mean more people may have to quarantine if a classroom has a positive COVID case. In a message to parents this week, Pandolfo explains the district feels that trade-off would be worth it and would result in more student in-person contact days. Citing a New York Times article, Pandolfo adds the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is assessing the study data and may revise school guidelines.
So we're waiting, you know, I'd say certainly anxiously waiting to see if that changes, because that would, again, I think, alleviate anxiety for folks and just make our operation go that much better.
Currently, 6th grade and under meet in person, and 7th grade and up meet in a mix of in-person and remote. According to data presented by middle high school principal Sarah Kimball, roughly 45% of middle school students and 40% of high school students are in person currently 4 days a week. Pandolfo also discussed plans for next school year and made clear COVID precautions won't be going away.
We will likely still be wearing masks. We've put in a whole ton of ventilation. We've got a lot of good safety protocols. I actually had to do a double take when the question came up recently, I think in one of my million threads with principals about, so next year, we're not just going to be having all kids eat in the cafeteria, right? Because we may not be able to do that. And we may need to continue to eat in classrooms.
But Pandolfo aims to have all grade levels in person 5 days a week come fall 2021. Remote learning would still be an option, but it would look different than this year when many students have been part-time in person and part-time remote.
And I see it currently as students either choose to be 100% in person or they choose to be 100% remote.
For students who choose 100% remote, Pandolfo notes the district is exploring using Colorado Digital Learning Solutions, a state-supported online program, rather than having TSD teachers juggle in-person and remote students as they currently are. 1 year after the pandemic sent classrooms online, school isn't back to normal, but it's getting closer. The town of Telluride is once again looking into offering long-term camping at a portion of the town park campground as a way to help with the regional housing crunch. Mayor Delaney Young brought up the idea with the town's Parks and Recreation Commission during public discussion at their meeting this week to gauge their interest in the idea, which had also been considered late last year.
It had come up as an idea for usage in the winter, and due to many obstacles, it was not thought to be an acceptable or prudent idea.
Members of the public, Young explains, have brought up the question again for the summer season. Parks and Recreation Director Stephanie Jacquet notes she would need more information.
Delaney, I wasn't aware that partial use was being considered. So, I mean, just there's a lot more that needs to be shared and commented on in terms of management. Co-managing a facility can be almost more difficult than changing it entirely.
However, all members of the commission say they would be open to more discussion once there is a formal proposal to review. Here's Commissioner J.J. Osla.
I think our biggest concerns were primarily about winter. It was snow removal. It was maintenance. It was freezing lines. It was how do you deal with this in the winter and giving us a short time period to actually review the management. So that still has to be planned for if it extends into winter, but certainly in the summer, open to look at a new proposal.
But Vice Chair Teddy Errico has some reservations. He's open to seeing a proposal, but says he's concerned about any use in town park that's not Parks and Recreation.
You know, I may compromise on allowing maybe a small portion of the campground to be used. I understand what our short-term needs are, but my frustration is more holistic, that I don't see enough coalition and working together between towns of Telluride, Mountain Village, Telsky, San Miguel County, and a few other larger players to really put together solvable solutions for hundreds of units. That is a regional wide problem. And I get very disappointed when regional problems fall upon the shoulders of the town of Telluride for us to fix.
Mayor Young says the town will reach out to the commission with further details in the coming weeks. Jacquet says there would need to be a final decision before the commission's next regular meeting on April 21st and would require a special meeting. But the commission did not make any plans to schedule one during their discussion this week. The campground is scheduled to open for the season on May 14th, with the online registration system opening up April 26th. After years of preparation, the town of Ridgeway is set to break ground on 30 rental units of workforce housing on the edge of the downtown commercial area in the coming months.
It's monumental for a town the size of Ridgeway to have 30 units like this being built in a beautiful structure downtown.
That's Ridgeway Mayor John Clark. The 1,000-person town is one of the first in Colorado to see housing come from the state's Space to Create initiative, a partnership with ArtSpace, a nonprofit developer that builds workforce housing and community space for creative workers across the U.S., a broad category that includes typical artists like musicians or painters, and others like web designers or architects. Launched in 2015, the state program seeks competitive applications from Colorado areas looking for workforce housing to support their creative community. Deidre Silbert is the Ridgeway Community Initiative's facilitator, who has overseen the housing project in the town.
I remember the town manager at the time, Jen Coates, and I had a conversation, and we basically both said, how could we not apply for this? It felt to us like it was made for Ridgeway.
Ridgeway's interesting because 12% of the residents there are employed in creative industries. It's the highest percentage in the state.
Margaret Hunt is the director of Colorado Creative Industries, which has helped administer Space to Create. She says that concentration was a key factor in Ridgeway's selection for the housing, along with its experience of what she calls the Soho effect.
Artists and creatives move into rundown neighborhoods or affordable places, and then those neighborhoods and places become hip and cool, and then gentrification starts to occur, and then they can no longer afford to live there. Well, that had already started to happen in Ridgeway. It was more the Telluride effect, as they call it.
The Space to Create initiative is a sort of first of its kind. ArtSpace has been developing workforce housing for creative workers for over 30 years. But according to Andrew Michelson, director of property development for the nonprofit, the Colorado partnership is the first time they've collaborated with a state on a set of projects. That collaboration, he explains, helps ensure support from the communities and local governments they're working with.
It creates an on-ramp in this work in the state of Colorado that we don't necessarily have elsewhere. And that really allows us to kind of hone in on, you know, what this project is trying to do in a very expeditious way.
Hunt and her office also serve as a sort of liaison to pair the projects with support from state departments. That sort of advocacy from inside the government, Michelson notes, is unique and helpful.
Every affordable housing project is really stressed to bring all these sources together. There's a lot of boxes we have to fit in as far as regulations and doing all these things. And the credit availability, the cost of construction, all of those things continue to increase. And having someone who's dedicated and connected within, you know, policymakers and legislatures to bring those resources to bear is really critically important.
In Ridgeway, Silbert explains, the state has already invested about $1 million in the project before construction has even started. The main source of funding ArtSpace uses, though, comes from low-income housing tax credits, a federal program that provides tax incentives to build low-income rental housing. But that funding has also forced a bit of a pivot. According to Hunt, in Colorado, the state's Housing and Finance Authority, which administers the credits, doesn't want them to finance projects exclusively for one type of worker, such as creatives. So, while the Space to Create units will go to areas seeking to support their creative community, they will be open to anyone who meets income thresholds. Hunt notes they are looking for other, more flexible sources of funding as they progress to other communities around the state. But the Ridgeway units will still go to good use. Here's Mayor Clark.
To me, the essence of keeping Ridgeway the special community that it is maintaining our socioeconomic diversity. And the only way we're going to do that is with some deed-restricted housing.
And Silbert isn't worried about filling the 30 spaces.
So we anticipate that people who are living here now, whether they're couch surfing or living in their cars, I mean, we have all of that happening, we know that, or they're in fear of being kicked out of their places, this is a project that will house those people.
She says she's even heard from interested people in other states, but eager renters will still have to wait a bit. Silbert anticipates construction will start sometime before June. Applications for tenants, she predicts, will come out in early 2022, with a move-in date mid-2022. 'Tis the season, once again, to vote. Three Mountain Village Town Council seats are up for election on Tuesday, June 29th. Candidates must be registered electors who have maintained legal residency in Mountain Village for 120 days immediately preceding the election. Anyone interested in running must submit a letter of intent and candidate biographical information sheet to the clerk's office via email no later than 5 p.m. on Friday, May 14th. Mountain Village Town Council members serve 4-year alternating terms with an election every 2 years. Ski film legend Warren Miller passed away in 2018 at the age of 93. KHOL film critic Jeff Counts reviews a new documentary about his life and tells us what it has to say about the winter sports culture that Miller chronicled for more than half a century.
Good documentaries are good for many reasons, but they never succeed if the filmmaker gets the voice wrong. The choice of how the story is told is driven by who is picked to tell it. Since a documentary director is not dealing with professional actors or a fictional and therefore flexible script, they have to rely on regular people and the often unpredictable meander of their thoughts. Editing can do a lot to shape such an experience, sometimes too much, but there is no doubt that the voice of a documentary is its soul. Whether the subject calls for an Attenborough-esque stream of urgent consciousness or a rapid-fire collage of experts and associates, the talking part matters. Warren Miller knew this intuitively, which is why he built his career and his empire on telling his stories himself.
When I first saw a Warren Miller movie, I was blown away that that level of skiing existed.
Chances are his mother and father raised him wrong.
Can we say that?
I don't know why not, I just said it.
The creators of Ski Bum, available now on Amazon Prime and other streaming services, agreed that the best person to speak about Warren Miller was Warren Miller. The core of the narrative derives from an interview Miller did just before he died, and follows him from 1930s California to World War II, and eventually into the mountains that would rewrite his topographical DNA. Annually, from 1950 to 2004, Miller shot film on the world's greatest runs and worked with the best skiers he could find. His movies were shown in cross-country tours that he managed personally, providing live narration for every screening in the early years. The production values increased steadily with each season, but Miller never stopped voicing his own scripts. His gentle cadence and dry, almost antique humor became as integral to the overall experience as the scenery and the turns. As a brand, Warren Miller's name became bigger than any resort or ski maker. It's no wonder the popularity of his sport grew right along with him. Good documentaries also require conflict. Ski Bum definitely introduces the ingredients of a few, but none of them are fully explored. There's a moment when the 93-year-old Miller is recounting one of the more painful chapters of his life, and you can tell exactly when he said all he intends to. Director Patrick Creedon then just leaves it alone. He doesn't pursue it, or make any of the multiple other interviewees expand on it. Most of the bumps in Miller's road are handled this way. His marriages, his ambitious son, his rare but significant failures. They all get mentioned, but are quickly contextualized in service to his legacy. I don't want to call Ski Bum a puff piece, but I have to admit there's a lot of mythologizing going on. All of the pro skiers and industry protégés that make up the Talking Head cast are clearly Warren Miller people. They adore him. They are indebted to him. And why not? His work was influential and enduring because of how much joy he wove into it, and they have him to thank for their very livelihoods. He might have died as royalty, but he started as, well, a bum. In a free-spirited world like extreme skiing, rags are worth way more than riches. And Warren Miller was the regular guy who stayed regular while the sport he championed became explosively popular and often frustratingly exclusive around him.
This is a guy who started in a trailer in the parking lot.
I think it took a degree of stupidity to do that. It worked.
He shot it, edited it, took it out on the road.
He crisscrossed the country.
He loves inspiring people.
Do it now, because if you don't, you'll be 1 year older when you do.
If you have ever seen an amazing mountain biking or whitewater kayaking movie, you have Warren Miller to thank for it. Adventure sports filmmaking might have somehow sparked into life without him, but we will never know. He's the king of it all, and Ski Bum is a worthy tribute.
Governor Jared Polis has signed a bill to cancel some standardized testing at grade schools this spring. But, as KOTO's Scott Franz reports, the federal government has the final say.
Colorado needs a federal waiver to enact its testing plan, which seeks to end science and social studies testing this year. English and math tests would continue for some grades. Senator Don Corum of Montrose says testing should be scaled back because the coronavirus pandemic continues to challenge schools.
I think we are standing for the children. We are standing for the parents. We are standing for the educators.
More than two-thirds of parents support canceling the tests, according to polling from Colorado's largest teachers union. The bill originally aimed to cancel all of them, but some subjects were added back in after opponents raised concerns. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 20. Friday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-50s, and Friday night mostly clear with a low around 20. Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 50, and Saturday night, snow showers are likely with a low around 20. This has been the news for Thursday, March 18th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who has donated to KOTO during our winter fund drive. A huge thank you to Kurt Moe, Delton Poole, Todd Creel, Nick Kennedy, Angela Mallard, Lance and Laura Waring Colbert, Eric and Josephine Polenius, James Liu, Sarah Vavra, Maria Matera, Elizabeth and Michael Tobin, Karen Patterson, Sally Russell, Mike Balzer, Robert Peter, Nancy Kraft and Rob Schulteis, Mike Lynch, Aiden Gibbons, Celine and Scott Campbell, Sally Puff Courtney, Axel Koch, Jim and Joanne Steinbach, Cameron Gerber, Tom and Terry Gabarin, Mary Beth Mueller and Jonathan Tuckman, Erica and Dan Henschel, Peter Harrelson, Sally Jones, Devin Wilson, Marilyn and Sam Siegel, Bill Hayden and Leigh Sullivan, Christy Truitt, and Scott Samuelson. Thank you all so much. And now, a personal commentary.
Hey, CODA listeners. Did you know that anxiety is the most common mental health complaint in the United States? In Telluride, a recent survey revealed that 37% of high school students reported feeling stressed more than 4 days per week during the pandemic. Considering how common and pervasive anxiety has become, the San Miguel Communities That Care Coalition and Tri-County Health Network have collaborated to present two community events addressing anxiety in youth this month. Join us on March 30th at 6 p.m. for a community screening of the movie Angst and hear from teenagers, mental health professionals, and even Michael Phelps about the effects of anxiety and how they have found positivity and hope. This event will be followed by a panel discussion with community members and mental health professionals. Register now at tchnetwork.org/events-and-classes. or give us a call at 970-708-7096.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You are also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you'd like to comment, please contact a staff person here at KOTO. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.